Okay. So approximately 60 million youth age 6 to 18 years participate in organized athletics. And however, there is a growing trend towards specialized training at an earlier age. And coincident with this, there is an incidence that is higher in overuse injuries has been rising precipitously. So just an overview of my talk. I'll briefly speak about the epidemiology of overuse injuries, talk about the definition of overuse injuries, risk factors, and also a phenomenon known as specialization, talk about prevention for overuse injuries, and finally conclude. So first, epidemiology. In the U.S., nearly 72% of school-aged youth, which are aged 8 to 17, comprising approximately 69% girls and 75% of boys, participate in at least one sport, and that is about 29 million youth in organized sports. Single sport specialization appears to be increasing dramatically, and it may be driven by factors such as pursuit of scholarships, professional contracts, and peer pressure. And there may be a perception that is driven by coaches, parents, and children that elite athletes require pretty much training all year round to have the dream of playing in a professional league. But the reality is that only 0.2% to 0.5% of U.S. high school athletes ever make it to the professional level. It is estimated that there are 35 injuries per 100 youth athletes with injuries in athletes aged 11 to 18 years. And the majority of these injuries are in the lower extremity with about 60%. And now that concussion has been more and more highlighted, we're finding that 15% of these injuries actually involve concussions. And the sports with the highest incidence, for boys at least, are ice hockey, rugby, basketball, soccer, and football. And in a survey of 1,214 athletes between the ages of 7 to 18 years, at least 69% had overuse injuries over the previous school year that they surveyed. And looking at the injury type, again, the lower extremity has a preponderance of these overuse injuries, with the knee being the most common area, and the most common diagnosis is patellofemoral pain. So now a definition of overuse. It is a microtraumatic injury to the bone, muscle, or tendon, and that has been subjected to repetitive stress and hasn't had a chance to repair sufficient time to undergo the normal reparative process. And it actually has a four-stage process going from least severe to most severe. The least severe is a patient has complaints of pain in the affected area after activity. The next severe injury would include pain after activity that restricts their performance. Next in severity would be pain during the activity that restricts their performance. And lastly is chronic unremitting pain even after resting. Now, looking at the biomechanics of adolescent overuse injuries, it's important to note that adolescents have a particular predisposition to these injuries because their muscles, bones, and ligaments are not fully developed yet. And the tissue maturation progress is not a straight line process, and many patients and different patients in different age groups progress at different times. So it is important to note that there's a particular condition because of the biomechanics of adolescents that predispose them to these injuries. And there are animal studies that actually shown that the strength of the epiphyseal cartilage in the tibia has decreased ability to oppose load during puberty. Again, looking at more of the biomechanics in adolescent overuse injuries, there is an altered tissue characteristic that can distort the normal biomechanics that increases the risk of overuse injuries. And looking at baseball in particular, especially youth pitchers, they depend on their cuff musculature and truncal rotation more than older athletes, and this is combined with their excessive humeral torque during the throwing motion and their undeveloped musculature, and the fact that they have open epiphyseal plates predisposes them to cuff tendonitis, shoulder instability, and humeral epiphyseolysis, also known as little league shoulder. And looking at other injuries in baseball in particular, and baseball has really had a lot of attention in the lay media and in general because it is a sport where pitching is looked at as far as risk for overuse injuries as very high. And there have been pitch count limitations based on multiple studies, but more notably in 2006. And the most common injury in pitchers nowadays is an ulnar collateral ligament injury, and it is directly attributable to the overuse injury that these pitchers have, and it has been increasing exponentially. So it's a very alarming trend that we're seeing in orthopedics. Now, for another sport, overuse injuries in gymnastics. Unlike other sports, gymnastics is really a year-long sport. And also gymnasts, they're constantly learning new skills with increasing difficulty. And these increasing difficulties create different loads on their body. And their peak performance actually occurs during adolescence. So a lot of them are competing harder, earlier, and more often than other athletes. And few of them are able to compete past their early 20s because of this unique characteristic in their loading patterns. And the most common injuries in gymnastics include spondylolysis, due to mostly back walkover skills, especially in girls, and wrist injuries, because in gymnastics, your upper body basically becomes a weight-bearing extremity, and this predisposes them to multiple stress fractures. Looking at overuse injuries in ice hockey, I don't know if there are any Pittsburgh Penguin fans here, but congrats. Hip and groin sprains are very common complaints in hockey players, and it's actually been shown that with new studies, these hip and groin injuries are actually most likely femoroacetabular impingement, and this may be the actual source of their hip pain rather than just a groin strain. Looking at swimmers, the majority of swimmers think that their shoulder pain is just a normal part of training, and they kind of grit and bear it and go through it, when in actuality, the pain that they're experiencing can be a combination of actual impingement in their shoulder and just the need for development of their shoulder over time. And they actually start developing ligamentous laxity, and because of the training that they experience, they do not have sufficient time for rest and recovery, so the process keeps perpetuating itself over and over again. And young swimmers are particularly at risk because their shoulders actually have increased internal and external rotation, which changes their mechanics during the swimming motion. So diagnosing overuse injuries, of course, you want to obtain a thorough history of the athlete's training volume and overall level of participation. It's important to note how much they're training outside of the normal school team, because a lot of these athletes are competing in school leagues as well as private leagues. And so you also want to talk to their private coaches, their parents, and teammates, because these exposures to athletic events actually predispose them a lot more to these injuries. And in female athletes, it's important to take a menstrual history because that can also have an impact on stress fractures. And also just having a general nutrition history for men and women are very important. So diagnosing overuse injuries, especially stress fractures, are extremely important because it's often overlooked as a growing pain or some kind of bone bruise, but having any kind of bony tenderness on exam should prompt at least some kind of imaging, if not advanced imaging, at least an x-ray. But MRIs are most important and most useful in diagnosing stress fractures, and this is actually a very telltale sign, and very disastrous sign sometimes, because that can be an impending stress fracture of the femoral neck, which can cause a patient or most likely a runner who has this experience to have to undergo surgery to save the hip. So this is a very important diagnosis not to miss. Now going on to risk factors for overuse injuries. They can be characterized by growth-related factors, other intrinsic factors, and extrinsic factors. So growth-related factors, again, this relates to the fact that they're adolescents and they're changing. And intrinsic factors really include just their previous history and their level of conditioning and basically mechanics and their techniques during sport. And extrinsic factors include sort of peer pressure, the equipment that they use, and their training regimen. One factor that has received more attention has been the sports training ratio. And if we look at the gray boxes in both columns, the first column is uninjured patients, and the second is injured patients. So in the light gray, that is structured sports, and the dark gray is unstructured sports. So it's important to note that in patients who are not injured, they have a unstructured sport ratio to structured sport ratio that is greater than those that who have injuries. So the ones that are injured actually have an organized sports ratio to unorganized sports ratio greater than 2-1. And they find that this ratio of 2-1 organized sports to unorganized sports predisposes them to a multitude of overuse injuries. And they postulate that this occurs because in unstructured sports, such as just free play, recreation, kids are really directing their own activities, so they can always take a break whenever they're tired, if they feel cold or they just get bored, they can stop. But with some kind of structured activity directed by a coach or a parent, they feel that they have to keep on pushing through any kind of discomfort, and that's kind of the point where they start experiencing injuries. So treating overuse injuries, really, the mainstay of treatment is non-operative, and it involves complete rest of the injured extremity, physical therapy, looking at the mechanics, and reduction of participation, pretty much all things that I'm sure everyone here kind of knows. But it's also important to explore the cause of injury and figure out ways to prevent it from becoming a chronic injury. And lastly, the last resort would be surgery. And in the example of omocardial ligament replacement, or omocardial injury, would be Tommy John surgery. But that's the ultimate last resort, of course. So looking at this phenomenon known as specialization. So in sort of current times, society seems to be more infatuated with looking at athletes and treating them like full-fledged professional athletes, and there have been multiple reality shows. Friday Night Tights was actually a Texas reality show, but it's subjecting kids to pretty much higher physiologic load and treating them like professional athletes, even though they really are not ready for that. So, but there, in general, there's sort of a push towards having kids think about specializing in one sport earlier and earlier, in the hopes of getting a scholarship or getting a professional contract in life at some point. So it's definitely something that we see in the current time, and the trend is increasing. So what is sport specialization? It's intensive year-round training in a single sport at the exclusion of other sports. And there are multiple degrees of specialization. There's a low specialization, moderately specialization, or highly specialization. And there are few characteristics for the level of specialization. So you can either have year-round training greater than 8 months per year, or choose a single sport as a main sport, or quit all sports to focus on one sport. So if you do all those three things, you are highly specialized and you have a high risk of overuse injury. So that's one thing to keep in mind, these three components. There's also a phenomenon known as early sport specialization. And that has three components. That's participation in intensive training in organized sports greater than 8 months, so similar to sports specialization, of course, and specialization in one sport. But it involves prepubertal children, basically seventh grade and below. And so why is there a push for specialization now? As I mentioned, society seems to be infatuated with trying to get children to specialize earlier in the hopes of getting contracts and scholarships. But why specialize? Why just focus on one thing? One book that came out a few years ago by Malcolm Gladwell kind of touted this 10,000-hour rule, saying that the more hours you spend early on can make you more successful going forward in older adult years in multiple endeavors, from music to sports, and that has been pushed into the kind of public parlance. So that's very relevant with this specialization push. But the reality is that the 10,000-hour rule is really only theorized to apply to musicians, and it came from a psychological studies decades ago. So it was based on violinists who achieved elite status after 10,000 hours of practice. So really, 10,000-hour rule applies to professional musicians, not really athletes. But, you know, we look at Tiger Woods and think, okay, so he started playing golf at the age of two, so he put in 10,000 hours earlier. But in actuality, his story, unfortunately, I mean, I don't want to make light of the situation, but his story actually is more indicative of what happens to young athletes who specialize early in sports, that they undergo burnout and stress. So, you know, lots going on with Tiger Woods, of course, but his example actually is very illustrative of what happens when you specialize early. So specialization early also has a detrimental effect in athletes, and it's actually been shown that the elite athletes may specialize later in life, and there have been multiple studies that back this up. In this top study here, They found that swimmers who specialized before the age of 11 years spent less time on a national team and retired earlier than late specializers. In the next study here, they found that elite players began intense training and specialization after the non-elite players, and that was usually after the age of 13. In another study, they found that elite athletes were more likely than near-elite athletes to begin intense training after the age of 12, and it goes on and on. And basically, in this last study, they found that elite athletes began intense training in sport later in life, but also played other sports. So elite athletes actually start later in life, and they play more sports. So it's kind of almost counterintuitive to what society has been telling us. But elite athletes are actually doing a lot more other sports than that one sport that they end up specializing in later in life. And there is a role for deliberate practice that was mentioned in Malcolm Gladwell's book and also in the original thesis of this 10,000-hour rule. And there's no doubt that deliberate practice is valuable for the athlete, but there's actually little support that deliberate practice is necessary at a high amount during childhood for the development of an adult elite athlete. And so there are multiple concerns for sport specialization for kids in childhood. And it's associated with increased rates of overuse injury, burnout, decreased motivation for participation, and sports withdrawal. So if you think about this risk, you kind of think it reminds you of kind of what's happening with Tiger Woods in terms of his back pain, but also his psychosocial issues as well, not to delve too much into his situation. But that kind of captures what happens with early sports specialization sometimes with kids. There's been research that multi-sport participation promotes better long-term performance and an increase in lifelong physical activity. Other concerns with early sports specialization, children who specialize early in life may have less age-appropriate skills as their peers, and they are just deprived of the opportunity to have other sports under their belt that allows them to develop neuromuscular patterns that may be actually protective of injury. So, Doing multiple sports actually teaches you how to train and have balance and coordination that actually protects you from injury. So that's why kind of having a diversity of interests is good early on. So who specializes in sports early on? So highly specialized athletes are actually more likely to be female. 53% versus 46% are female. And they start playing organized sports in their main sport at a younger age, at 6.3 years of age, and playing their main sport at 7 years. And they play their primary sport more times as well. So they play it 12.9 hours a week versus 11 months a year. Also, the school size has a big impact on who specializes. And there is a significant association between school size and specialization. In this study, they looked at school size and found that a small school had less athletes specializing than large schools. So it was really 25% versus 48% if you look at these black boxes. And that's also intuitive because larger schools have more facilities, have more teams, so it makes more sense that a larger school has a higher number of athletes who are specializing. But that's just important to know, to take back to your own school and kind of think through that as well. But a recent study actually found that specialization in and of itself is actually a risk factor for overuse injuries. And this study looked at students who were either moderately specialized or highly specialized, basically those three factors, 8 months of year, one sport, and playing in a majority of the time. So a highly specialized athlete has almost a 2.25% of a serious overuse injury compared to a student who does not highly specialize in a sport. So what's the evidence that specialization actually has an impact despite a couple of studies? The National Athletic Trainers Association actually put out a position statement, and unfortunately they found that the evidence is not exactly strong arguing against specialization. So when you look at delaying specialization for older athletes, they only found that the recommendation only reached a level of C, which is based on consensus and disease-oriented evidence. And if you look at sport modification as a protective effect for preventing injury, it only had a recommendation level of a B. But the available evidence actually does support the idea that high levels of training for a single sport does not improve overall achievement and actually puts the youth athlete at risk for injury. So now on to prevention. Many sports have actually come out with a few specific guidelines, and baseball being kind of the leader and the one first on the scene because of the concern for pitching in young pitchers. And they've come out with pitch counts based on a daily limit and pitch count based on weekly limits. And there is debate on whether or not coaches and players and teams actually follow this pitch count because, again, as I mentioned, that elbow injuries in little league players and young athletes are actually increasing. So there is some debate whether or not pitch counts are actually followed and if it actually makes a difference at this time. Another sport-specific guideline includes cycling. They actually have gear ratios that are restricted to allow riders to change their pedal cadence to reduce the risk of injury. But regardless of these guidelines, there actually has not been research to show whether or not these guidelines actually make a difference. It sounds good on paper, but there's no evidence saying since these guidelines have been put in place, there's been any significant decrease in overuse injuries. But it's a step in the right direction because it has people thinking about these restrictions. A more holistic approach involves integrative neuromuscular training, and this involves age-related training that promotes development of a neurocognitive process that helps with their visual motor abilities. And of course, you need a good coach who is knowledgeable in this aspect. And they found that youth who specialize in a single sport, if they have to specialize in that single sport, if they have periods that break up this single sport to focus on integrated neuromuscular training, or as we know, it's strength and conditioning, and they can develop a diverse skill set that helps them have further injury. So the American Orthopedic Society for Sports Medicine actually came up with a consensus statement on overuse injuries, and they basically want to put it out in the public that multi-sport participation will not diminish the athletic capabilities of athletes. And they want to develop an optimal level of exposure to maximize training and minimize the risk of injury, but that trade-off really has not been identified yet, so more research is in the works for trying to find that balance of maximizing training and minimizing injury. But they also want to make it very clear that early sport specialization has not been shown to be beneficial for high caliber athletic performance at either the national team level, the Olympic level, or professional levels. And it is in fact detrimental. And in a very recent paper last month, they came up with three very succinct recommendations to follow for youth in athletics. And they said that they should avoid playing one sport greater than 8 months a year. They found that those youth who played that sport greater than 8 months a year actually had a 62 to 90% higher incidence of injuries. And the second recommendation is to play no more than 16 hours of sport per week. And if you do that, if you play more than 16 hours a week, you're more likely to sustain an injury of any kind, an injury of overuse or a lower extremity overuse injury. And lastly, athletes who participate in a sport for more hours per week than their age were more likely to have an injury. So an athlete who is 11 should not practice more than 11 hours a week. If they're 9, no more than 9 hours a week, and so on. So that's kind of very easy guidelines to follow that they found in their research that it dramatically decreased the rate of injury. So it's increasingly common and important to have parents know that, and trainers and education, and educate coaches and trainers and physicians that the risks of sport specialization early on, they need to know the early signs of injury to prevent serious injuries, to limit the participation of competitive athletes. So in conclusion, early sport specialization is increasingly common, leads to overuse injuries in adolescents, and sport-specific guidelines for injury prevention needs more research. But however, changing their attitudes about attaining elite performance in athletes will require agreement among coaches, parents, and medical personnel, as well as athletes, which is a difficult task, but worthwhile. So I want to thank you. And if there are any questions.